closer.
Howdy, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Investigation Podcast. I'm your loving host, Todd Conklin, and you're in for some fun today. So the year is zooming by, as years tend to do, and here we are in the fall, the autumnal section of the year, which I must admit, and probably I should spend a couple seconds just kind of talking about it. It is by far the most beautiful time to be in the Rocky Mountains. I don't know where you're from, but I bet it's gorgeous. I love it there, and I've eaten at a great restaurant. I can pretty much say that everywhere in the world. You pick a place, I can say that. But there's nothing quite like New Mexico in the fall. So imagine, if you will, the smell of roasted green chili, of pinon pine, of fireplace smoke, all kind of mixed together in a non-urban, rural setting where the nights are crisp and bright and the days are sunny and warm. And if you can imagine that, multiply it by about seven, and that's kind of what it's like in Santa Fe. It's gorgeous. If I haven't invited you yet, you're all invited to come to Santa Fe. Please come to Santa Fe. I'll take you to someplace painted brown, and we'll eat some kind of burrito, and it'll be fun. That's for sure. But I got to tell you, the fall is just, it makes me glad to be alive. And as I've told you before, this is the year I'm practicing gratitude. And so I'm grateful to have the job I have, to have the friends I have, to live in a family that I live in, and to enjoy spending time with you on this podcast. And maybe that's why today's going to be a really cool day. So today I'm going to introduce to you someone, if you don't know him, you probably should. James Howe, H-O-W-E, but his friends all call him Jim. Jim's the president of Safety Solutions, which is a consulting firm that specializes in management systems and really the application of systems thinking to safety and health. If you don't know Jim, well, first of all, I wonder where you've been, maybe under a rock. But I'd also say you probably should know him. Jim comes with – in fact, he'll talk about his background because I asked him about it. But he comes to us from the automotive industry, where he was very, very instrumental in creating an automotive industry worldwide that flatly just didn't kill as many people. But what he really is a great guy. And this podcast is kind of a homework assignment, because a bunch of us are on this team to look at fatalities and serious events. And to be really honest with you, even before we go into it, the assignment is for Jim to speak about his thinking around fatalities. And I will tell you, that assignment was a brilliant assignment. Whoever thought of this idea should get the mini Nobel Prize, not the big one. Because Jim's going to take this discussion to a place that if you work in safety or in operations, you need to hear what Jim has to say. He's going to talk a lot about how the wrong people are in the room to answer the question, why we kill people. I'm not going to talk a whole lot more about it. I want to give you a chance to listen to Jim and see what you think. Without any further ado, here's Jim Howe. So thanks for doing this.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. Thank you. Really, it's a great opportunity for me. And, you know, and I appreciate the opportunity to do it.
Well, so tell us, how'd you get started? What's your whole history?
Well, got involved in health and safety. This is stuff that you don't know. I worked a long time ago at U.S. Steel. I was a millwright apprentice. You didn't know that.
And no, then, no, really? That's cool.
After that, I went to GM, and I ended up working for the union on health and safety. And then I ended up in Detroit working at the UAW headquarters on health and safety, and I ended up being the assistant director. And so I did a lot of work in the auto industry and, you know, heavy truck aerospace, got to a lot of different places, and also investigated, in the course of that, investigated a lot of very serious incidents and a lot of fatalities. And then about 10 years ago, I retired and set up my consulting business. But through all of that, I think I was influenced a lot by a lot of things that had went on in the auto industry, not only in the area of health and safety, but in the area of quality and other areas. So, and then while I was involved with the UAW, of course, I did a lot of different things, but as well as investigating serious incidents, as I mentioned, but I started working on management systems, and I worked on the initial efforts on ANSI Z10, the management system standard. I was the vice chair for a number of years, and now I'm the chair of that committee.
Well, that was the question I was about to ask you. Is that background kind of what got you interested? Is it the meeting point of quality and production and safety that kind of got you interested in the systems view? Because you've got a really strong background and a strong leaning towards understanding systems.
Yes, when I went to back in the early 80s, the first time I went to a Deming seminar, Dr. Deming actually came to my plant. I was from a really large plant. And that was in 1982. In fact, we had his 82nd birthday at our facility. And I was and still am very affected by Dr. Deming and that kind of approach to quality and system thinking. I always thought that I learned an incredible amount from Deming on health and safety, even though, you know, his quality presentations, but really it's system thinking. So I was heavily influenced by that.
And it shows. I mean, that really shows. And so what sort of guides you? I mean, you're so dedicated and so good at what you do, and everywhere I go, you're there, or you just were there, or you're coming there, or you're going to be there next week. What is it that motivates you? What keeps you in safety?
I just enjoy the work. I enjoy the people. I'm one of those people that loves going to workplaces, too. I find it fascinating. I love to learn how people do stuff. I love to try to understand how we load containers on ships. I love to understand, you know, how we run hospitals. I love to understand how we, you know, run steel mills, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I find it incredibly fascinating. And of course, the health and safety work takes you to all different levels of activity. So I just really enjoy doing it, and I find it an incredible opportunity to learn. I love just learning things and reading and, you know, working with people and trying to, you know, figure out solutions to different problems.
So let me ask you this, and maybe I should start by, let me preface what I'm going to ask you by saying this. I've been to the M&M plant. Where is the coolest plant you've ever been to? What is the most interesting thing you've ever seen?
Oh, God, I don't know.
You are such a politician. You're the nicest man on earth.
I'm not trying to. That's a good question. That's a great question. I found it fascinating watching them load the ships. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is cool.
Containers on ships. I thought that was phenomenal. I've been around steel production and things like that a lot, so I find that fascinating. Auto plants, you know, I kind of take them for granted these days, but most people, when they go through an auto plant, they find it fascinating, whether it's an engine, transmission, or, you know, assembly plant or whatever. And the ones that I find least interesting or the most challenging in some ways are the meatpacking facilities. I think the meatpacking facilities are incredibly challenging from a health and safety standpoint at many different levels.
Oh, yeah.
I mean that seriously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, so let's take it to this question, because there's a reason I really wanted – well, there's a million reasons I want you on this podcast. But the topic I'm really interested in a lot in talking with you about is fatalities and serious events. And a lot of people have taken to call them FSI, fatality and serious injury. But are fatalities is that the ultimate bad outcome of safety? Is a fatality the same as an accident? I mean, of course, a fatality is an accident. What do you think about all this fatality stuff? Because I know you're thinking about it a bunch. We all are. And I'm curious to see where you're coming at it from in your thinking.
Well, I have sort of a biased point of view, and I'm probably similar to your situation. The incidents that I get involved in are almost always very serious and almost always fatalities. So I don't really get involved in less serious incidents, unless, except in a few cases. So I've learned an incredible amount by studying and thinking about fatalities and thinking about how they occur in organizations and just thinking about all of the different aspects. And so I've just been heavily, I was kind of involved way back when I was working at a facility, a 19-year-old kid got his hand caught in a roll former, and he lost several fingers. And I think that serious incident affected me a lot, because I thought that if I ever worked in health and safety, I was really going to try and stop things like that. You know, as a kid, you know, high school graduate, near ready for college, captain of the soccer team, you know, National Honor Society, et cetera, et cetera. And now his life has significantly changed at 19. So I've been involved in a lot of things like that. And I've gotten to know families and people involved from the incidents, not just investigating. Mostly what I do is investigate it, but I've gotten to know some family members very well as a result of it too, to understand how these things affect families and that type of thing.
And I see, I mean, I'm with you. I'm the same kind of, I don't know how we got to this place, but I'm in the same place. The events I look at are always pretty icky. Is a fatality, should we see a fatality as an extreme emotional event? How should we look at it as safety professionals?
Well, I think as safety professionals, you have to, you know, again, it goes back to my system thinking. I really think that, and you teach this a lot, we need to try to understand the event and the context and all of the factors involved. The, you know, in the traditional safety view is that, you know, when there's an explosion at a plant or somebody gets killed or whatever, the traditional view is, well, somebody screwed up, there was some bad behavior, there was some widget that failed, there was some valve, there was some pressure relief valve that failed, there was some procedure that wasn't complete or whatever. And all of those views are really non-systemic or anti-systemic views, and fail to kind of look and understand that, you know, safety is an emergent system property, and it's the system that's producing these results, not an individual valve or behavior or procedure and the rest. And that one can't even understand those things unless they understand the context and the interrelationship of those things with many other factors, including, you know, the organization, the culture, the, you know, communication levels, et cetera, throughout the organization. So fatalities give us an incredible opportunity to really think about and understand these things, because people are much more willing to delve much more deeply into fatalities than they are other incidents. Other incidents have enormous potential that's untapped, but people tend to associate the level of investigation, quote unquote, with the level of the outcome or the consequence, which of course we know is not appropriate. We ought to spend a lot of time thinking about fatalities, but there are many, many other incidents where the outcome wasn't very significant, but the potential was there, and a much more significant in understanding or learning or investigation is certainly appropriate. So that we understand the system issues, the system factors, and we take full advantage of the situation and the potential learning. Because the other part of it, and again, I think probably most people on this podcast know that when a serious incident like that occurs, the organization, there's a willingness on the part of many in the organization to step back and really look at what they're doing, and there's an openness to change. And that's a fairly small window sometimes with some organizations, but there is an opportunity, a significant opportunity at times to make change.
And that burning platform, I mean, that we really have to leverage that. So what you're saying sort of eludes the Heinrich model, the pyramid.
Yeah.
And I'm really, I don't know if the word is curious or frightened by or freaked out by the fact that we've sort of made fatalities the logical outcome of bad safety. In fact, if you really push me, we made fatalities the logical outcome of worker error. What do you think about that? Because that's not what you just explained. What you explained was really holistic. If I had to draw it, I'd have to use pretty much the whole whiteboard.
Right. Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I think the Heinrich Triangle is one of the mental models that has really hurt us in health and safety, because it's saying that it essentially says that really bad outcomes are the result of really bad causes, and this sort of, again, linear thinking. And it takes us back to this knowledge that this mental model, it says that if we work on minor incidents, it'll affect serious incidents and so on and so forth. And we know that there's overwhelming evidence that this isn't true, and some people continue to use the Heinrich pyramid. But the opportunities for learning are there all over the organization. And one of the mistakes that we make is that we uncouple safety and operations, which is an artificial distinction that we make that's certainly not the result of reality. Reality is that these things you cannot uncouple, operations and safety are really one thing. But we create these distinctions, and as a result, the organization can't take advantage of real learning. And what I'm trying to get to is the learning and the opportunities and the organizational factors that undermine health and safety at times are the same factors that undermine quality or productivity or several other factors in the organization. And we tend to look at them as silos, as unconnected. These are safety problems. These are safety innovations or interventions that we need to implement, et cetera, et cetera.
So hold on. So you're telling me I could pulse and learn from a quality event and perhaps prevent a fatality accident?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you an example. Again, I remember a facility that they were machining some very valuable metal for some very important engine parts. They were losing a lot of money. And they had the workers filling out cards as quality. If you know, how many good parts and bad parts. The workers filled out the cards, and the parts were always good. But the scrap tub was always full at the end of the shift. So there was this problem. So they sent in this Deming-type guy to this department, said, figure out, we got to improve the quality over here. He started asking the workers. Most of the workers said, we don't know. The scrap tub's full, but we all make good parts, right? Eventually, a couple of workers said, look, if we mark bad parts, we get sent home. We can't afford to get sent home, so we mark good parts, et cetera, et cetera. Now, eventually, they told the workers, if you mark the parts properly and just tell us there's problems, we'll work on the problems and fix the problems. And eventually, there was a huge change in the department. That fear in that department, that environment, think of how that affects everything.
Yeah,
you know, the machines are in bad shape. People don't report problems. They can't talk about what's really going on, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that is really confined to quality?
No, of course
that
not.
That environment? Yeah. So that's the point.
But what you're saying is so powerful. Why is this message not being talked about? Why do we not tie quality in as another set of eyes to look for potential conditions that could kill workers, or really operations into another set of eyes? I mean, it's makes so much sense, because what you're saying is completely true. To a worker, there's no difference between quality, safety, environmental. I mean, production, it's all the same. It's all work.
Right. Exactly. I always remember when I would go into a big facility, manufacturing facility, and you're trying to identify where are their major concerns or where could there be serious incidents, et cetera, et cetera. One of the first things I do is I go talk to the workers and say, where are you having problems? And they'll say, well, on this part of the machining line and that part and that part. What do you think they're telling you? They're saying, here are the areas where we're running into problems, where we may not be able to follow the procedures, where we may have to defeat some of the defenses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because we have problems and we're trying to get the work done and be safe, right?
Yeah.
And so you see right away that there's this close relationship frequently, not always, between operational issues and safety and health issues.
So jump that one step forward. How do we take this idea, translate it into some kind of operational system, and use it predictively to manage safeguards or reduce and mitigate hazards so we can actually make our workplaces less likely to have FSI, fatalities and serious events?
Again, I think we have to make sure that health and safety people are paying attention to operations. If you at the average, and again, I'm painting with a broad brush, and there's certainly many exceptions, but the average health and safety person has their plate full. They're trying to deal with the quote-unquote health and safety problems, and they're not even aware of where the major operational issues are and problems that are really challenging, you know, workers and supervisors and the rest, and dramatically increasing risk, because obviously we know that hazards and risks are dynamic, and we know that these operational changes and challenges are creating some new hazards and certainly intensifying risk, you know, dynamically. So again, the health and the traditionally old view of health and safety is, gee, we went and did a risk assessment in that department, and you know, we know the risk on these different operations and so on and so forth. Well, that's great, but that may or may not have taken into consideration the changes in the current operational issues, which again significantly impact health and safety. But this is partially, it's a change that we need to make with health and safety folks, and it's certainly a change that we need to make on the operations side, because too often the message is that obviously safety is the responsibility of the safety folks, and operations and safety are separate and so on and so forth. And again, when you talk to somebody like Bob Edwards, who works on the learning teams, over and over and over and over, this notion is reinforced that every time they go out and learn about events, whether it's a quality event, they learn about safety issues. When they're looking into safety issues, they're finding quality and productivity issues and challenges. You just can't separate them. We separate them artificially, but they're really not different.
So are you saying something this bold? Are you saying we should get rid of safety?
I'm saying that what we need to do is, one, we need to understand these safety issues are really operational issues, and operational folks need to understand those. And what we need to do, one of the exercises I do with people, Todd, is take a sheet of paper, make a line down the middle. We have two columns, and on the left-hand column, write all of the things that you do as health and safety people that are non-systemic activities that tell the rest of the organization safety is the responsibility of the safety department, that create barriers between safety and operations, so on and so forth. On the other hand, on the other column, write down the things that you do that build a system, that empower operations to take over health and safety, that build systemic thinking, that, you know, it's the system that's producing these outcomes, that safety is a property of the system, not some individual thing. It's not a property of the safety department. It's not a property of a procedure, et cetera. Those are elements, but it's the entire system that you focus on. And health and safety, and so you, this exercise, people fill the sheet out and they say, yep, here's all kinds of things that we do that we know are anti-systemic and that just maintain the old view. And here's a bunch of things that we're starting to do. We may not have time to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because One of the things we're trying to do is we need to ask health and safety people to do some different things, but what we also need to be doing is helping them identify things that they should stop doing so they'll have time to do the kind of things that they need to be doing. And almost every health and safety person I've ever met can do that. You can ask them, again, take a sheet of paper, write down the things that you're doing that are really a waste of time, that aren't really contributing to health and safety, and they'll make a list, right?
Yeah, a big one probably. Yeah,
they alone can't make the change, right?
But you're saying something. So listen to this. When it plays, listen to what you're saying because it's amazing. So getting a room full of safety people to talk about fatalities is stupid. In fact, the room needs to be filled with operations people who talk about fatalities. And then operations thinks of ways they can build systems where a fatal or serious injury is not a probable outcome. Isn't that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And the room should be filled with, obviously, workers, supervisors, engineers, operational folks. And in the course of doing this, and again, we know this from our experience with learning teams, that kind of thing, we know that all sorts of problems are going to come out. People are going to talk about the environment. They're going to talk about the culture. They're going to talk about the way they work. They're going to talk about influences and factors that the health and safety people really are completely unaware of, not through their own fault, just because they're not doing the work. They're not, facing the day-to-day realities of the operations.
So our safety strategies for our companies, our safety goals, our safety path forward, our safety journey documents, our fatality prevention program would be much better served if safety didn't do it. In fact, if we were sort of the vessel, the conduit, the facilitator, but really the material, the information, the data comes from the people who do the work or manage the work being done.
Right. In your language, I think, Todd, it would be that the safety people help facilitate the understanding of the blue line, the way work is actually performed, and sort of help hold up a mirror to the organization and say, is this really how we want work done? Is this the way we understand it? And is this acceptable and appropriate from a control, from a risk, safety standpoint, and so on and so forth? Because so often, even the operations folks are unaware of the operations management, are unaware of the realities of how people have to, the pressures that people are under, the context in which they work when they're actually getting the job done, and what it really takes. And also they're unaware and often shocked at the unintended consequences of decisions that they've made, how they adversely affect, the health and safety and operations. Peter Senge's first law of system thinking is my favorite. Today's problems are the result of yesterday's solutions.
I
think that is so true. And again, unintended consequences, people well-meaning, well-intentioned, but leading decisions and solutions, quote-unquote, that led to consequences that were completely unintended and undesirable.
Wow, Jim. You are amazing. That was really good. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Can we come back and actually talk more about safety? The hidden agenda in this podcast was to really focus on the very topic we focused on, which was fatality and serious injuries. But in about 30 minutes, you made me think a whole bunch about the special project we're on and the special projects that are happening, around the world, certainly in North America, Europe, Australia, South Africa, those areas that are really thinking about this. I'm convinced now that if we bring the wrong people in the room, we'll always get less than adequate answers.
Absolutely.
Man,
absolutely.
Absolutely. You're like, I don't know what you're like if a genius married an angel, they would produce you, Jim.
Well, thanks, Todd. And I just wanted to, in all seriousness, Todd, I want to thank you personally for how you've helped me. You've had a huge impact on me. I mean, you know that, you're aware of it, and really, I appreciate it. And it's an honor for me to be on one of your podcasts. I really mean that.
Thank you, Jim. You're welcome, too, because we're all in this journey together. And the one thing I think the podcast does better than anything, and it's kind of an unintended consequence, speaking of unintended consequences, is it's it really helps build a sense of community. It gives us a chance to listen to each other and to talk to each other.
Absolutely.
This was great, man. Okay. I don't know why we waited so long.
Well, schedules and everything else.
We're both so damn popular. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Oh, man. Sorry about that last part. I didn't know whether to cut it out or leave it. The whole sense of building community seems important, so I left it. But Jim's podcast, if that didn't rock your little world, what's gonna? So I think we have the wrong people in the room. In fact, the more I work with this podcast, the more convinced I am. I'm just convinced we've got the wrong people in the room. Don't bring a room full of safety people in to make a safety strategy. Bring a room full of operations people in for them to make a safety strategy because they know the work at all levels. But the thing that really sort of kicked my butt intellectually is when Jim said really bad outcomes are the result of really bad causes. And, you know, when he said that, I imagined one of those red circles with a slash to it over the top of that. Because what he was saying is our thinking, our mental models are failing us by limiting our thinking, and that we think bad outcomes have bad causes, when in reality, that's never true. That's never, never true. In fact, it's always the little tiny causes along the way that become collectively sufficient to create a catastrophic failure. And that's where we are on this topic. So that's the podcast. Thanks for listening and thanks for subscribing. You'll never know how good it is to have each other on this journey. And it's all because of you. Thank you so much for listening. Until then, learn something new every day, have some fun, and good golly, be safe. Damn, Jim made me think that time.